The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
So it is. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if we're on Facebook or not. Facebook Live is weird. I schedule it each day, and then I sort of tell it to go live at 5, but now it's not letting me tell it to go live, though it was supposed to just start automatically. So, Facebookers, if it's not live, come on over to YouTube, come over to Twitter, Periscope, or Twitch, because we're, you know, streaming video on all those places, and I can't figure out what's going on Facebook. Anyway, welcome to a Monday. I'm already off kilter because I came on the air on Saturday. Saturday because, well, the impeachment trial was going on. Yeah, the impeachment trial, such as it was. Oh, the best laid plans and all that stuff. So did you hear what happened? We are on YouTube. Cool. We're there. I needed to make sure YouTube was going. And as for Periscope and Twitch, I can't really check. So I think they're going, you know, have it sort of set up on semi-automatic. We shall see. Anyway, welcome to a Monday. I hope your Sunday was okay. Saturday was kind of weird around here because the trial was scheduled to kick off again at 10 a.m. Saturday morning. So I made my way into my studio, my cup of coffee in hand, fired up the YouTube and the audio. I didn't do a podcast because basically what I did was run, you know, the hearing that was going on with my running commentary because I couldn't not do it. Let me just give you a little bit of a refresher, how things changed from Tuesday to Saturday. Because on Tuesday, you know, Jamie Raskin and the other House impeachment managers presented their case for why this was constitutional, why the Senate does have the power to impeach a former president. Well, actually, to take to impeachment trial a former president who had been impeached while in office. You see, when Donald Trump was impeached by the House, and make no mistake, he's been impeached twice, regardless of how the Senate voted. He's been impeached. So the second time he was impeached by the House of Representatives while he was still the sitting president. But Mitch McConnell, at the time, the Senate majority leader, said, well, Senate's on recess and I'm not going to bring them back for your silly little impeachment trial. So the only time they could do it was after Trump was already out of order. Out of office. Sorry, he was out of order, but that's besides the point. After he was already out of office. So they scheduled the impeachment trial. They laid out evidence, the impeachment managers did, showing that other figures, maybe not presidents, but other officials had been impeached after they were already out of office. The reason being, there's got to be a way to hold them accountable. Now, since my eighth grade civics class, I was of the belief that the Congress had oversight of the executive branch because the United States government was brilliantly designed to rely on a system of checks and balances. And you had three branches of government: the legislative branch, which is Congress, the executive branch, which is the White House, and the judicial branch, which is the courts. And they're set up so that each branch had checks and balances over the others. But the key phrase here was, these are three co-equal branches of government. Well, as I tweeted out this morning when I awoke, the realization I came to this morning when I awoke is, it's President's Day. Hey, go buy a mattress. But seriously, folks, this is the first President's Day in which the legislative branch does not have oversight capabilities over the executive branch. Now, it sort of does over the judicial, because allegedly the legislative branch gets to confirm the nominees for the judicial branch put up by the executive branch. Right. Although, you know, Mitch McConnell did away with the filibuster on judicial nominees, thereby being on the Supreme Court, thereby being able to push through some of the worst Supreme Court nominees, now justices in our history. So our system of checks and balances, I was going to say, is teetering on the edge. But you know what? It's broken. It doesn't exist anymore. There is no oversight of the executive branch anymore. And let me just say, that's something that needs to be fixed, because we desperately need it. So, you know, I guess you probably heard what happened. Before we get to that, let me share with you a little bit of breaking news, and then we'll get into what happened. But Nancy Pelosi's office released a statement this afternoon, maybe just an hour or so ago. In it, she said that it was clear from the evidence presented during Trump's second impeachment trial and the findings by General Russell Honoré, who was brought in to kind of oversee what the investigation into what happened on the 6th, quote, that we must get to the truth of how this happened. She emphasized the necessity of the, she said she's going to form a commission, a 9/11 style commission to look into what happened. Here's a direct quote from her statement. It is clear from his findings, General Honoré, and from the impeachment trial that we must get to the truth of how this happened to protect our security, Three times. Our next step will be to establish an outside, independent 9/11 type commission to, quote, investigate and report on the facts and causes relating to the January 6, 2021 domestic terrorist attack upon the United States Capitol complex and relating to the interference with the peaceful transfer of power, including facts and causes related to the preparedness and response of the U.S. Capitol Police and other federal, state, and local law enforcement in the National Capital Region. Thank you. It continues, as we prepare for the commission, it's also clear from General Honoré's interim reporting that we must put forth a supplemental appropriation to provide for the safety of members and the security of the Capitol. Yeah, I agree with all of that. So thank you, Nancy Pelosi. And as much as I believed it was the responsibility of Congress to impeach this alleged president, The Senate Republicans, to be clear, just showed that they do not give a shit, that their jobs are more important to them than is the survival of the nation, the survival of our republic. My screen just went blank. So if you're wondering why I'm hesitating, oh my God, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 computer screens going. And the one on which I have all kinds of stuff, the videos that I'm going to play and stuff, just went dark. And I don't know why. I didn't turn you. Oh, somehow it looks like it got powered off. Let's see if it comes back on. Please. Yay. All right. Sometimes it's an easy fix. I don't know what I kicked or what I knocked, but it's back. So spit and bubble gum does wonders in a broadcast studio. Anyway, so, you know, but there are other things too. If you were watching from the beginning, and yes, I watched every day of it, because this was history. This was, again, think about it. Think back to January 6th, and we saw it coming. How they're claiming that law enforcement didn't know is beyond me, which leads me to once again say there's a hole. And I think Jamie Raskin did an amazing job, but except for one area that they didn't delve into that Nancy Pelosi says this commission will. What happened to law enforcement? What happened to the National Guard? Who told them they could not go? Because somebody issued that order. I think it goes all the way to Trump. And his acting Secretary of Defense, you know, he changed a whole lot of top level Defense Department, Homeland Security, Justice Department officials in the weeks leading up to January 6th. This was all planned. And for the, you know, the lawyer, oh my God, the lawyers were just a joke. So it started on Tuesday. The lead attorney for Trump that day was this guy, Bruce Castor, who was so inept and so bad. He spent the whole time going, oh my God, I watched their presentation and wow, I've been outflanked.
I'll be quite frank with you.
Yeah.
We changed what we were going to do on account that we thought that the House manager's presentation was well done.
Was well done.
And I wanted you to know that we have responses to those things. I thought that what the first part of the case was, which was the equivalent of a motion to dismiss, was going to be about jurisdiction alone. And one of the fellows who spoke for the House managers, who was a former criminal defense attorney, seemed to suggest that there's something nefarious that we were discussing jurisdiction and trying to get the case dismissed. But this is where it happens in the case, because jurisdiction is the first thing that has to be found.
What?
We have counter arguments to everything that they raised, and you will hear them later on in the case from Mr. Van Der Veen and from myself.
Okay. All right. So that was Bruce Castor. Well, apparently Trump, of course, was watching because it's all he does is watch television and fuming. It's like, oh my God, what's he doing? So they bring in this Van Der Veen guy who was the polar opposite of Castor. Because everything, first of all, everything he said was a lie. This was gaslighting at its, I was going to say at its finest, but at its worst. Really, this was the worst example of gaslighting. Everything he said was really a lie. And I don't have a bunch of his clips, mostly because he was so reprehensible, so just offensive in every aspect. But let me tell you what happened on Saturday. I get my days mixed up as best as I can. They came in Saturday morning ready to, you know, have the day's worth of testimony. But on Friday night, a story broke. A new story broke. It was CNN. It was actually their reporter, Jamie Gangel, who broke this story that Republican Congresswoman Herrera Butler of Washington State was there when Trump called Mike Lee's telephone by mistake looking for Tommy Tuberville, and Mike Lee handed Tuberville the phone. And Tuberville, or she wasn't there when this happened. She heard, I don't know who tell the story. She heard, oh, Kevin McCarthy tell the story. I'm all confused, but she was, you know what? Let me let Jamie Raskin explain, because the story broke. Again, the story, sorry, I'm all over the place. The story broke Friday night. Jamie Raskin comes up to get the hearing going, to get his first, his first argument of the morning. And everyone thought they were going to wrap up Saturday. But instead, Jamie Raskin explains that, no, actually, now we need to call a witness. Can I get a witness? Tell us, Jamie Raskin. So he'll tell you what this was about.
Last night, Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler of Washington State issued a statement confirming that in the middle of the insurrection, when House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy called the president to beg for help, President Trump responded, and I quote, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are."
That's what the conversation was. Duh.
Needless to say, this is an additional critical piece of corroborating evidence, further confirming the charges before you, as well as the president's willful dereliction of duty and desertion of duty as commander-in-chief of the United States, his state of mind, and his further incitement of the insurrection on January 6th.
Right.
For that reason, and because this is the proper time to do so under the resolution that the Senate adopted to set the rules for the trial, we would like the opportunity to subpoena Congresswoman,
and this is when
Herrera
I screamed,
communications with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
Because that's what they should have done.
To subpoena her contemporaneous notes that she made regarding what President Trump told Kevin McCarthy in the middle of the insurrection.
Yeah, baby.
We would be prepared to proceed by Zoom deposition of an hour or less.
Mm-hmm.
just as soon as Congresswoman Herrera Butler is available, and to then proceed to the next phase of the trial, including the introduction of that testimony shortly thereafter. Congresswoman Butler further stated that she hopes other witnesses to this part of the story, other patriots, as she put it, would come forward. And if that happens, we would seek the opportunity to take their depositions via Zoom, also for less than an hour, or to subpoena other relevant documents as well.
You go, Jamie Raskin. So sorry, I'm all over the place. But yes, that was what the issue was. The call from Kevin McCarthy to Donald Trump while this was happening, while the Capitol was under siege, and Kevin McCarthy is begging him, do something. And Trump's like, well, they obviously care more about the election than you do. So that was the testimony he wanted to get under oath. So Vanderveen, who is now Trump's lead attorney, this lying piece of shit ambulance chaser, he's a personal injury attorney. He is not a constitutional law professor, as Jamie Raskin is. He knows nothing of constitutional law. He is a personal injury lawyer from Philadelphia. So anyway, he gets up and starts making threats.
But if they want to have witnesses,
yeah,
I'm going to need at least over 100 depositions.
Oh, fuck you.
Not just one.
Oh, fuck you.
The real issue is incitement. They put into their case over 100 witnesses, people,
yeah,
who have been charged with crimes by the federal government.
Yeah.
And each one of those, they said that Mr. Trump was a co-conspirator.
Yeah,
with.
They did. They pretty much.
That's not
almost
true.
Yes, it is true.
But I have the right to defend that.
You do?
The only thing that I ask, if you vote for witnesses,
yeah,
do not handcuff me.
No, that's your people who
by
came with the zip ties to handcuff
of
members of Congress.
That I can have.
Yeah.
I need to do a thorough investigation that they did not do.
Yeah, they did.
I need to do.
Stop impugning their integrity.
Style.
Stop casting aspersions on their
that
asparagus.
Nancy Pelosi called for.
It's Pelosi, first of all, not Pelosi.
It should have been done already.
Yeah, it was.
It's a dereliction of the House manager's
duty. Oh, fuck you. Okay, enough of this guy. So he argues his nonsense, right? And then it goes back to Jamie Raskin because this went back and forth. So Jamie Raskin gets up and he says,
thank you, Mr. President. First of all, this is the proper time that we were assigned to talk about witnesses. This
yes, it is.
Within the course of the rules set forth by the Senate. There's
yes,
nothing
it
remotely
is.
Unusual about this. I think we've done an exceedingly thorough and comprehensive job with all the evidence that was available last night. This was breaking news, and it responded directly to a question that was being raised by the president's defense counsel, saying that we had not sufficiently proven to their satisfaction, although I think we've proven to the satisfaction of the American people, certainly, that the president, after the breach and the invasion took place, was not working on the side of defending the Capitol, but rather was continuing to pursue his political goals. And the information that came out last night by Congresswoman Butler, apparently backed up by contemporaneous notes that she had taken,
yeah,
I think will put to rest any lingering doubts raised by the president's counsel, who now says he wants to interview hundreds of people. There's only one person the president's counsel really needs to interview, and that's their own client. And bring him forward, as we suggested last week, because a lot of this is matters that are in his head. Well, why did he not act to defend the country after he learned of the attack? Why was he continuing to press the political case? But this piece of evidence is relevant to that.
Yes, it was. So Jamie, you know, I got to tell you, Jamie Raskin is so good. He was just, you know, he's so calm. And knowing what he's gone through in his personal life over the last month, I'm blown away by his composure and how, you know, this guy was Vanderveen was so over the top and just lies and vitriol. I mean, obviously, you know, he was coached, and I'm not making this up. This is fact, by Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and Mike Lee, who met with the defense And after the first day where Bruce Castor, all he did was praise Jamie Raskin and the other impeachment managers for the great job they did. They had no defense. So Cruz, Lee, and Lindsey have been coaching them, working with them. They were seen coming out of the office where they were, you know, doing their work a number of times, even during the on Saturday. So Vander Veen gets up again, and now he's angry.
Impeachment. Yeah, they threw a lot of stuff in it in violation of Rule 23.
No. This guy, I don't know what Rule 23 is, but I know more than he does.
Combine counts.
Oy.
It's a defect in their entire case. It's one of the four reasons why you can
really
vote to acquit in this case.
What's so funny to me is this is a guy, again, who's a personal injury attorney. He is not a constitutional lawyer. He was in so far over his head, he had no clue what he was talking about. And at one point, the chamber starts laughing at him.
Let me take my own advice and cool the temperature in the room a little bit.
Yeah, you do that, Michael. Now there's the first laughter. Because all he had was anger.
The incitement.
Yeah.
It's not about what happened afterwards. That's actually
no,
the irrelevant
that's part of it.
Stuff.
It is not irrelevant at all. It's not irrelevant at all. But he keeps going.
But. If he does, there are a lot of depositions that need to be happened.
Yeah.
Nancy Pelosi's deposition needs to be taken.
Kamala. He was about to mispronounce her name again. And then he stopped himself.
And not by Zoom.
Oh, my God. Yes, but why not?
None of these depositions should be done by
Zoom.
Why?
We're in a pandemic.
We didn't do this hearing by Zoom.
Whoa. Ooh. Whoa.
These depositions should be done in person.
Why?
In my office in Philadelphia. That's where they should be done.
And everyone's now laughing at him. Probably partially because of the Philadelphia.
That's the way it works, folks.
No, folks.
You
don't know shit. Oh, my God. Okay, enough. I'm not going to subject you to more of his stuff because he was in so far over. He didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Well, then a deal is made between leadership and leadership, the Republicans and the Democrats. Obviously, they didn't want to draw this out. The Democrats, Joe Biden, want to move on with their agenda. They want to get stuff done that we desperately need, like the COVID relief package. And this would draw it out for weeks. So they came to an agreement that the testimony, the sworn statement from Representative Herrera Butler of Washington State would be allowed into the record. So Jamie Raskin read it.
Mr. President, the managers are prepared to enter into the agreement. I will now read the statement. This is the statement of Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, February 12, 2021.
Okay.
In my January 12th statement in support of the article of impeachment, I referenced a conversation House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy relayed to me that he'd had with President Trump while the January 6th attack was ongoing. Here are the details.
Okay.
When McCarthy finally reached the president on January 6th and asked him to publicly and forcefully call off the riot,
yeah,
the president initially repeated the falsehood that it was Antifa that had breached the Capitol.
Amazing.
McCarthy refuted that and told the president that these were Trump supporters. That's when, according to McCarthy, the president said, "Well, Kevin, I guess these people are more upset about the election than you are."
Oh, my God.
"Since I publicly announced my decision to vote for impeachment, I have shared these details in countless conversations with constituents and colleagues."
This is, again,
and multiple
Congresswoman
times
Herrera
media
Butler speaking.
"And other public forums."
Oh, and that's all I have of it. That's my Bernie picture. We'll get to that in a moment. The statement was read into the record. A lot of people, myself included, were pissed off because in the first impeachment trial, they were screaming, "What's a trial without a witness?" And now they won in a vote the right to call witnesses. The vote was 55-45, giving them the right to call witnesses. And then they said, "That's all right. As long as we have the statement, we can read it into the record. We're good." I could argue either side, and we'll talk with Lisa Graves in a couple of minutes and find out what she thinks. But let me just share with you after all was said and done, and then they gave their closing arguments, Jamie Raskin, how he wrapped it up. Because, again, I'm such a huge fan of this man now. I was before, but even more so now. This is how Jamie Raskin concluded his case, the impeachment trial, second impeachment trial of Donald Trump.
Senators, I understand, I'm told we have around 27 minutes.
It doesn't go 27 minutes.
All of that, but perhaps five back to you. There's just a few things that I need to address.
Tell us, Jamie.
So in an extraordinary and perhaps unprecedented act of self-restraint on my part, I will resist the opportunity to rebut every single false and illogical thing that you just heard, and I am going to be able to return to you in perhaps 22 or 23 minutes. Few points. One, we have definitely made some progress in the last few days, because a few days ago, the president's team, although I think it was perhaps a member who has since left the team, lectured us that this was not an insurrection.
Right.
And said
they did.
That the impeachment managers were outrageous in using the word insurrection. Today, counsel in his closing statement said it was a violent insurrection, and he denounced it. And I would certainly love to see President Trump also call it a violent insurrection and denounce it too. And I believe, although I don't have a verbatim text, that counsel called for long sentences for the people who were involved. Again, I would love to hear that come from the president as well. The distinguished counsel complains that there's no precedent with the developed body of law that the Senate has for impeaching and convicting a president who incites violent insurrection against the Congress and the government of the United States. Well, I suppose that's true because it never occurred to any other president of the United States, from George Washington to John Adams mm-hmm. to Thomas Jefferson to James Madison to James Monroe yeah. to Abraham Lincoln to Ronald Reagan to George W. Bush to Barack Obama to incite a violent insurrection against the Union. You're right. We've got no precedent for that. And so they think that that somehow is a mark in their favor. That's yeah. a score for them, that this Senate has to be the first one to define incitement of violent insurrection against the Union. And so the gentleman puts it on me. He says, inciting a president for committing incitement to violent insurrection against the Union is the new Raskin Doctrine.
What?
We've tried to convince him that there are well-known principles and elements of incitement, which we have talked to you about ad nauseum, and that this is an intrinsically, inherently fact-based judgment. But if that is the Raskin Doctrine, that a president of the United States cannot incite violent insurrection against the Union and the Congress, then
I'll take
I embrace it.
It. Yeah.
And I take it as an honor.
Yeah, go for it.
Most law professors never even get a doctrine named after them. So I will accept that. And finally, the counsel goes back to Julian Bond's case, because I think in the final analysis,
Vanderveen referenced Julian
really
Bond.
About the First Amendment. But remember, they keep talking about stifling President Trump's speech. Someone tell me when his speech has ever been stifled. He says exactly what he wants, whenever he wants.
Yep.
If and when you convict him for incitement of insurrection, he will continue to say whatever he wants on that day. Remember, they referred yesterday to interference with his liberty, which I found absolutely bizarre, because everybody knows that he will not spend 1 minute in prison or jail
yep.
from conviction on these charges. It is a civil remedy to protect all of us, to protect the entire country, our children, our Constitution, our future. That's what impeachment, trial, conviction are all about.
Yep.
Are all about. Julian Bond.
Julian Bond.
See, I knew Julian Bond, so forgive me. Most people say, don't even respond to this stuff. I got to respond to this.
Okay. How dare they reference
Julian Bond?
Wow.
Was a civil rights activist who decided to go into politics, like the people in this room, like all of us who are in politics. And they tried to keep him out. He was a member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which really launched the voting rights movement in America. It's a great story that Bob Moses tells in his book called Radical Equations about, you know, he was a graduate student in mathematics at Harvard, and he went down to Mississippi. You know why? Because he saw a picture in the New York Times of black civil rights protesters, college students, I think in North Carolina, AT&T, and he saw a picture of them on the cover of the New York Times, and they were sitting in at a lunch counter. And he looked at the picture and he said, they looked the way that I felt. They looked the way that I felt. And he said he had to go down south to Mississippi. And they launched the voting rights movement. That's where the phrase one person, one vote comes from. It was not invented by the Supreme Court. They would go door to door to try to register people to vote. But anyway, Julian Bond was part of that movement. The student nonviolent coordinating committee, nonviolence. It was the end and it was the means, nonviolence.
Nonviolence.
And he ran for the state legislature in Georgia, a path other civil rights activists followed, like our great, late, beloved colleague John Lewis, who's in our hearts today. And when he got elected, they wanted to try to keep him from being sworn into the Georgia legislature. And so they said, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee is taking a position against the Vietnam War. You're a member of SNCC. We're not going to admit you because you took a position against the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, said you cannot prevent someone from swearing an oath to become a member of a legislative body because of a position that they took or a group they were a part of took before they got sworn in. That's the exact opposite of Donald Trump. He got elected to office. He swore an oath to the Constitution to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. He served as president for 4 years right up until the end when he wanted to exercise his rights under the imaginary January exception, and he incited a violent mob and insurrection to come up here, and we all know what happened. He is being impeached and convicted for violating his oath of office that he took.
Hello.
He's not being prevented from taking his oath in the first place.
You think?
The First Amendment's on our side.
Uh-huh.
He tried to overturn the will of the people, the voice of the people. He lost that election by more than 7 million votes. Some people don't want to admit it.
Yep.
Counsel for the president could not bring themselves to admit that the election's over.
No, they couldn't.
In answer to the question from the distinguished gentleman from Vermont, he refused to answer that. He said it was irrelevant, despite all of the evidence you've heard about the big lie and how that set the stage for his incitement of the insurrectionary violence against us. First Amendment is on our side. We are defending the Bill of Rights. We are defending the constitutional structure. We are defending the separation of powers. We're defending the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House against a president who acted no better than a marauder and a member of that mob by inciting those people to come here. And in many ways, he was worse.
Yep.
He named the date. He named the time. And he brought them here. And now he must pay the price. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Jamie Raskin. And that is all that needed to be said. It was so overwhelming. The evidence was right there. And yet, by a vote of, and this is insane, 57 to 43, they convicted him. But because this is an impeachment trial, you need two-thirds of the senators present to vote to convict. Two-thirds. That would be 67. So once again, Donald Trump, quote, wins by losing the popular vote? Seriously, 57 to 43, and yet he comes out victorious? It makes no sense. And then Mitch McConnell, Mr. McTurtle himself, for whatever reason, votes not guilty, and then delivers a scathing speech basically saying, oh, he's guilty, all right. He's guilty, all right.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it.
No question about it.
The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth.
So then, Mitch, what is your fucking problem? Oh, what he claimed was, well, we didn't have the jurisdiction to impeach a president who was no longer sitting. Well, you know what? If Mitch hadn't said, we will not bring the Senate back so you can hold your impeachment trial while he's still president, then it would have been a non-issue, number one. Number two, on Tuesday, they settled that. They brought it up. They argued the point as to whether or not it was constitutional to impeach a former president or to have the impeachment trial for a former president. And it passed. It was. That's a moot point at that point. But don't take my word for it, because I'm not an attorney. I'm just a radio person. Joining us in just a moment is Lisa Graves. And Lisa Graves, you've heard her on this program before. She's got the bona fides. She these days is executive director and editor-in-chief of True North Research. You find them at truenorthresearch.org. But she spent a lot of time working in those very hallowed halls. In fact, Lisa was deputy assistant attorney general in the Office of Legal Policy at the U.S. Department of Justice in the Clinton administration. She also, you've heard me bitch about Patrick Leahy over the past week, who was presiding over the Senate because John Roberts wouldn't do it. She was his chief counsel for nominations on the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. So Lisa's going to weigh in just a second, but it wouldn't be President's Day without a sale. Hey, so we've got a sale for you. Actually, I was so pissed off on Saturday. You know, we streamed the whole thing, but after they relented and gave in on the witnesses, I told the people in the chat room, you guys hang out here. I'll pop in from time to time, but I'm going inside. I'm going to paint because I can't deal with, I can't. I was sitting here yelling at the computer screen. So I went in the other room and I painted. And one of the things that I painted was Bernie. So here's the Bernie Sanders painting. Those of you watching can see it. Those of you listening to an audio stream, it's the Bernie meme from the impeachment, from Inauguration Day. And I posted it this morning or last night, whenever it was. And the response has been overwhelming. And a number of people have asked me, are you selling it? Well, I'm selling all my pictures. Actually, they're all available in return for a donation to the show because it's all about fundraising for this. And so what I decided to do is put up two auctions, one for this very painting you see. It's a small one. It's an 8x8 with acrylics, just as you see it. But the second one, you know how the meme worked where, you know, people put Bernie everywhere. So my second auction is for a custom Bernie. And you can see him right over my left shoulder, right there. He's on my wall, right over there, for if you're watching on the YouTube or anything. But the other one, you get to pick the size of the canvas you want. You get to pick the location you want Bernie sitting in because, you know, that's how the meme works. Bernie pops up everywhere. So I'll paint whatever background you want within reason, making sure I can do it because I'm new. And even if you want to change the color of his jacket or his pants or his mask, we can do that too. So there are two auctions going. They're all both up on eBay. They're 7-day auctions. You can get to them from my Facebook, from my Twitter, or from going to NicoleSandler.com/pandemic-painting. The links are there. Have at it. And we'll announce the winner next Monday. All right. All right. So now, with no further ado, let me welcome to the program our friend Lisa Graves. As I mentioned before, Lisa is a former deputy attorney general. Lisa, you need to unmute your microphone. That much I do know. There she is. Hey, Lisa Graves.
Hey, Nicole, you gave me a promotion. I was Deputy Assistant Attorney General, but I just wanted to say it's so nice to see you on the air. You're so brilliant and beautiful and talented.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Your painting is really lovely. So I just thank you again for having me on, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Well, I know you have a new puppy and, you know, I've been painting dogs. It all started. I just started painting in October. And then somebody said, can you paint my dog? I'm like, no, but I'll try. And I did. And it worked. So I've been painting pictures. And you have the cutest little, is he like a Great Dane puppy?
I'm calling him a medium Dane right now. But he's on his way to greatness.
But, oh, my God.
I do. I'm going to sign up for commissioned a dog painting for
awesome,
you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for suggesting that.
Whenever you're ready. So anyway, Lisa, I didn't have you on to talk about this or my, you know, Bernie painting, but I'm kind of proud. So you heard my setup am I crazy? First of all, Mitch McConnell, what the hell?
Well, you're not crazy at all. Okay. And that's precisely the right question to ask in response to the scorching statement by Mitch McConnell, which, you know, it's one of the rare times in which I've actually agreed with Mitch McConnell, except for in his actual vote, and his rationale for his vote. But he was, you know, certainly correct, finally telling the truth at last, although he, you know, gave a preview of that truth earlier last month, but just that obviously as anyone who is objective or reasonable or watching could see, Trump incited this insurrection, this violent insurrection, and the people were acting at his behest and trying to stop the votes from being counted, from being tallied by the Senate. It's as plain as the nose on your face. It's as plain as day. Notwithstanding the arguments of his, you know, pretty ineffective counsel, although I guess effective enough to get Republicans to have some reason to say to quit. The fact is that he, you know, that's exactly what Trump did, and it's exactly what he was tried for. It's exactly what a majority found him guilty of, and it's just an unfortunate flaw of the Constitution that they require 67 votes out of 100 versus 57. So. Yeah, that was really wild to see.
Yeah, and you're too nice. Lisa Graves is one of the nicest people I know. You are giving them too much credit, because if my dog Jackson had tried the case, they still the same 43 still would have voted to acquit him. Doesn't matter. They did not do an effective job. In fact, the first day was so laughable hearing Castor just praising the job. I mean, you could see him just going, okay, we're out of our league. But this Vanderveen guy, now again, I'm not an attorney, but I'm screaming at the TV and at the computer that he didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Am I right?
It was really astonishing. I actually do think, in my personal opinion, I'm going to say this, that your dog might have been able to do a better defense in some ways, just in cuteness alone, I'm sure. But but it was, you know, they really had no real defense. The defense's arguments were, you know, a repetition of lies and in many respects, but you're right. It wouldn't have mattered what Trump's attorneys said for the most part, because so many of the members of that Republican caucus were going to stick with him no matter what. You know, I want to say something about Mitch McConnell though, because we've all been witness to another massive lie told by Mitch McConnell repeatedly over these last several years, which is his supposed devotion to so-called originalism. The idea that they have put justices on the Supreme Court and other courts because of their devotion to the Constitution as it's written and its historical meaning, when there's absolute clarity in the historical record from an originalist standpoint, that presidents and people can be impeached once they leave office. There's no express bar on it. And in fact, the historical evidence is quite clear and compelling that impeachment was a process that was borrowed from English law long before the Constitution was written, and that it specifically allows impeachment of someone after office to bar them from future office. And so this masquerade that McConnell has been at the forefront of putting so-called originalist judges on the bench, that originalism means something other than whatever they want it to mean at the time politically, that's politically expedient, I think is revealed by the fact that McConnell would, you know, dare to, in essence, claim that, you know, the Senate had no jurisdiction to convict Trump, when any actual originalist worth his or her salt, if there were such a thing, anyone who I should say in a more clear way, anyone devoted to what the language and text of the Constitution says and the history of that language and text would say, obviously, that this was a permissible act of the Senate, and the Senate certainly had jurisdiction. And so while McConnell told the truth about Trump in that moment, he continued to basically lie about what originalism is or isn't, or what the Constitution says or doesn't say. And it's unfortunate that so many people have bought into this characterization of these Trump judges as so-called originalists. They really are very political, very right-wing people who, like McConnell, use the Constitution to advance their agenda when it suits them and claim that they're originalists when it suits them, and then claim that the Constitution compels an opposite result even when it does not. So I'm sorry to dig into those weeds,
but it
really sticks in my craw to have this mythology of originalism, and McConnell supposedly as one of the chief architects and advocates of originalism, go against it in the most profound way when it comes to holding the man accountable who literally sicked a mob, a violent mob, on the seat of our Capitol in an effort to destroy the election that he lost, and that McConnell went along with that. And so his ire in that speech, you know, I consider to be partly theatrical, given the fact that he knows full well that the Constitution permits that the act of impeachment, the conviction of impeachment for someone who has left office. And in fact, as you know, and your audience knows, McConnell could have held that trial 3 weeks ago.
Yep.
Nothing forbade him from doing so. He was just reluctant to play that role. So he's a coward, really, truly, at the end of the day, no matter what he said.
Without a doubt. And that's what was so infuriating. I mean, you know, I thought it ended when they, you know, they ended and I ended the stream. I'm like, thanks, everyone. Bye. And then I see Chuck Schumer get up and make a speech. It's like, all right. And then, you know, I'm in the kitchen cooking because I also do that on weekends. I cook for the week. And I'm making a thing, and then Mitch McConnell's talking, and I'm like, what's he going on about? And I'm listening, and it's like, is he saying that Trump needs to be charged criminally? Oh my God, that's what he's saying. And I was like, what the hell? Where was this? You know, when he voted yesterday or earlier today, what the hell? This is infuriating. He's talking, and the Chyron on CNN was awesome because underneath it, it says Mitch McConnell wants to have it both ways.
That's true. Although I have to say, I embrace criminal charges against Donald Trump. I really, obviously, personally believe that the effort to, you know, say Hillary Clinton should be locked up for all that locker up stuff was so extreme because it was so baseless. And in part because it was this sort of mania that Trump was fueling. But I don't believe that having pushed this lock her up sort of chant in so many different rallies should immunize him from actually being locked up for actual criminal conduct. And
absolutely.
I think it's quite clear, and as being explored in the state of Georgia for potential criminal charges, I think there are a number of crimes that Donald Trump, there's evidence that Donald Trump committed, not just around the insurrection, but previously, as is documented in the Mueller report from the special counsel investigation. I think this president has committed numerous crimes, and I eagerly await numerous charges being brought against him and numerous fora for his criminal conduct, in my opinion.
Me too. And I think I tweeted that out when this was all over. It's like, okay, the thing that will talk me down from the anger I'm feeling right now is our criminal charges being brought against him. So we know the district attorney in D.C. is looking into the insurrection. I know that the Georgia attorney general, I believe, or the district attorney in one of the Georgia cities is looking at, has already filed whatever to go after him on trying to, the call to the Secretary of State, trying to get him to find the exact number of votes he was down plus one to give him the election. I mean, all this stuff is illegal. We know that Cy Vance in New York is looking at his financials. We know that there's all kinds of stuff brewing out there. I want to see him do a perp walk, like now. No.
Well, you know, I think notwithstanding the cowardice and cravenness of 43 Republican senators, it will fall again to lower level in the sense of not in the United States Senate officials hold this man accountable to ensure that the rule of law is actually vindicated and to make sure that no president, including no former president like Trump, is actually above the law and is treated as if he is above the law. And there's also the possibility of a resolution passing with a majority under the 14th Amendment, which also contains a provision that was passed after the Civil War to allow Congress to prevent people from running for office who supported the insurrection at that time, the insurrection against the Republic of the United States. And so there are a number of options that remain available for holding Donald Trump accountable. There could also be civil suits.
Yes.
Civil liability for his conduct in inciting this violent riot that killed people, that killed a police officer and severely injured numerous other police officers and threatened the lives of many legislators and staffers. And so this is over in terms of the United States Senate, but it's not over for Donald Trump. It's not over in terms of accountability.
Not by a long shot. I have so many questions for you, Lisa Graves. Lindsey Graham, what do you make of Lindsey Graham the night after on the 6th of January, after they were all rushed out of there, their lives were in danger. They come back to finish the work. And Lindsey Graham looks like he hoisted a few and gets up and makes this impassioned floor speech. I'm just going to play a few seconds of it.
Three, that they didn't violate the Constitution of Wisconsin. I agree with the three, but I accept the four. If Al Gore can accept 5-4, he's not president. I can accept Wisconsin 4-3. Pennsylvania, it went to the Second Circuit.
All right.
So much for all the judges being in Trump's pocket.
Okay.
They said, no, you're wrong. I accept
this isn't the part I wanted to cue into, but
the Trump's lawsuit wasn't right. Georgia, they said the Secretary of State took the law in his own hands. He changed.
All right, hold on.
And had one. They said 8,000 felons in prison in Arizona voted. Give me 10. Hadn't gotten one. Does that say there's problems in every election? I don't buy this. Enough's enough.
Enough's enough.
We got to end it. Vice President Pence.
All right. So he goes on. He says, Joe Biden is the president. This is over. I hung with him for so long. I can't do it anymore. It's done. Now he says this. Oh, my God. I just got to play. Hold on. I got to play this one. This was yesterday.
Made Laura Trump almost a certain nominee for the Senate seat in North Carolina to replace him if she runs. And I'll certainly be behind her because I think she represents the future of the Republican Party.
Laura Trump represents the future of the Republican Party. Donald Trump has dirt on Lindsey Graham. It's the only thing I can think of.
Well, I hate to speculate, but I have to say I certainly have speculated privately that there's really almost no other explanation.
It seems
to me there are two explanations. One is there is some sort of blackmail in the hands of someone that is forcing or pushing Lindsey Graham to contort himself in such extraordinary ways in defense of this man and his family, or he's just so addicted to power that he simply cannot walk away from the man who he fears could remove him from power through not endorsing him or something. But it's astonishing. Now I have seen Lindsey Graham lie many times mm-hmm. in observing his behavior in the Senate. And it continues to be something that astonishes me that he was one of the impeachment managers.
Yes, for Bill Clinton. He was one of the impeachment managers for Bill Clinton. So lying about a blowjob is worse than inciting an insurrection in the Capitol and almost getting the vice president killed?
Yeah, it is just the most astonishing thing that he can continue to walk around with such, extraordinary contradiction in his behavior, in his actions, in his words. And it does defy sort of rational knowledge, given the lack of information we have about why he's doing this. But there's just no doubt that he's a craven and broken man who is willing to do basically almost anything to serve Trump.
Ugh.
And, it's vile, quite frankly, that he is willing to turn on a dime to serve his master in this way, this man who's so unworthy of such loyalty. And so it was interesting to see like a few moments of truth coming from Senator Graham's mouth on January 6th,
the
immediate aftermath of the insurrection. But we should have known that it was going to be a very brief interlude of truth in the midst of the sort of insane devotion and contortion that he's engaged in defense of Trump. And also, quite frankly, just in a, speaking in a personal capacity, not in my official capacity, but the idea that Laura Trump, the daughter-in-law in this sort of totally nepotistic arrangement that Trump has for, you know, whoever is the most subservient child or child adjacent person is a favorite of his or something.
The like future of the Republican Party. She should be the nominee for the Senate race for North Carolina because Richard Burr voted for impeachment, voted for conviction. I looked at her I looked at her history. She was, for a brief time, a producer on Inside Edition.
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishing. She has almost no qualifications to do any substantive policy work whatsoever. She's never really engaged in public service.
Nothing.
Although I suppose she claims that this work on behalf of Donald Trump is public service, but not by most people's definition. Yeah. And she doesn't have any,
nothing.
Qualifications that
there's
would,
no there there. Tommy Tuberville, as well just stack the Senate with incompetent people who have just like her father-in-law had no qualifications to be president. Yeah. And if he was appointed for any other job, he never would have gotten security clearance. The whole thing is so absurd. God. Yeah.
But I have to say, I appreciate the fact that Senator Burr and seven senators were willing to do the right thing and vote to impeach Donald Trump because impeachment was fully warranted. The evidence that the House managers presented was compelling over and over again. Their arguments were so cogent, so well-grounded in the law and facts. It's extraordinary that anyone who would be playing the role of an impartial juror would not convict under the circumstances, under the evidence that was presented. And so I've not been a fan of a number of the policies that Senator Burr has advanced, but I do, in essence, tip my hat to his integrity in that moment and doing the right thing, because most of his peers in that party, in that vote, did not. And so so it's also the case to see Senator Graham then, basically aiding in the attack on Senator Burr for for acting with integrity at that moment. It is an astonishing reversal. It's like Bizarro Superman or like a Star Trek episode where there's like the bad Spock or something.
No, Lisa, you know what it is? I came up, I coined a phrase years ago, but it fits more now than ever before.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
It's Opposite World. And it was true. I mean, I had that made. Boca Brittany Summers produced that for me during the Bush years. It was Opposite World then. It's Opposite World on steroids now. It's more true than ever before. You listen to that Vanderveen guy. Totally an opposite world. And the projection is where it really comes to play, because everything they accused our side of doing is what they were actually doing. So it just in is up, in is out, up is down. And nothing makes sense anymore. Oh, no, my God.
It's true. And then to think that many of these Republicans who have sided with Trump were willing to spend millions and millions of dollars and months of time investigating Benghazi.
Yes.
That idea.
Benghazi. Oh, my God. Yeah. For months. For how many hours did they have Hillary Clinton on the testimony? And Trump wouldn't even, answer questions in writing. I mean, the whole thing is just so, they're such hypocrites. But we knew that. So, realizing that we're not going to get satisfaction through the congressional oversight. Do you agree with me, Lisa Graves, what I said at the beginning, that Congress no longer has oversight capability over the executive branch?
Well, we're in a really precarious circumstance, quite frankly, because between the challenge to the subpoena power in the House during the Trump administration and this 50-50 Senate situation and not clearly having the votes, in essence, to issue subpoenas, Congress is indeed diminished, has been diminished by this Republican Party, this party that claims to be the rule of law party, just as Trump has claimed to be the rule of law president. Opposite world, opposite land, as you
opposite world.
Describe.
Yep.
There's no doubt in my mind, based on the historical record, again, not to prop up this originalism notion as like a false god. But the fact is that there's ample historical precedent for Congress's subpoena power to obtain witnesses, secure witnesses from the executive branch, whether they're current or former employees of the executive branch. And the fact that that's in doubt now in the courts and due to the arguments and extremism of this past administration is really a tragedy, because as every school child is taught, this is supposed to be three co-equal
branches of government. And it doesn't exist anymore because they just deny it. They just say, sorry, not playing that game. Well, it's not a game. This is the law of the land. That is a constitutional crisis. There's supposed to be a system of checks and balances, and they've upended it. So something's got to give. Lisa Graves, I guess we pick that up the next time we speak. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on, Nicole.
My pleasure. Thank you. See you, everyone, tomorrow. Bye.